Glad you're here, and hope that our continued thoughts on God's purpose for the family, as we now talk about God's purpose for the children. There's something I left off in the previous lesson, so I'm going to exercise the great authority I have as the teacher this time, the preacher, to add two more thoughts that are just so important. As I close the lesson, I ask fathers, what kind of husband is your daughter going to look for? And mothers, what kind of wife is your son going to look for? They learn from that. There's another side of that too, isn't there? Husband or fathers, what kind of son is your what kind of man is your son going to grow to be? Your son is learning how to be a man from you. And also, the mothers, your daughters, are learning to be what it means to be a godly woman. And so, both of you, the fathers and the mothers, have a tremendous responsibility in raising the children so that they are learning from you, well, what does it mean to be a godly man and a godly woman? And so make sure that you are setting the right example. We're going to look now at God's purpose for children. In Luke chapter 2 and verse 52, it is said of Jesus that He increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. He was a well-rounded person, was He not? That here He increased in wisdom. I would assume that would include the intellect, the ability to know and put that into practice. He grew in stature. That would have reference to His physical nature, that He was well physically. He grew also in favor with God and men. He grew spiritually. He grew socially. Indeed, when we are raising our children, we want to make sure they're well-rounded and excel in those things. Isn't it tragic that in our society, great emphasis is placed upon the intellect and great emphasis is placed upon the physical part? In fact, you can have your children taken away from you if you fail in those areas. But to be focused on the spiritual aspect, to raise a child to be in favor with God, not only is that not encouraged, it's discouraged. And our society makes it a very difficult task for us to engage in that. But I would ask the young people, what should be your goal? What is your goal in life? And I would suggest it ought to be the same as the adults. In 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 9, Paul says, whether present or absent, we make it our aim or our goal to be well-pleasing to God. Let me suggest to you, if you get anything out of these lessons, and you remember this verse, you will remember a verse that will help you tremendously in life. That if you say, my goal in life is to be well-pleasing to God, that will help you in every area of life. What that will do is that it says, if I want to be pleasing to God, well, first I've got to find out what is pleasing to Him. So that will increase my study of His Word. If I say my goal is that I want to please God, well, then what pleases God? So I'm going to study. When I find out what it is that pleases God, then I'm going to determine that's what I'm going to do and be in life, because I want to please God. And do you know that when you seek to please God, that will make you excel in all the responsibilities that God would have you to carry out? I have told other people, and Linda knows this, that I love God more than I love her. And I know that she loves God more than she loves me. But you know what happens in life when you have that as like a husband or wife relationship? When you say, I love God more than anybody, and I seek to please God more than anyone else, that will make you the best husband. And when, as the wife, you say, I'm going to love God more than my husband, and you seek to please God, that will make you the best wife. And when you seek to please God over your children, that will make you the best parent. And when you seek to please God above any and everything else, that will make you the best child. Because you're going to be doing the will of God. And you cannot do any better than doing the will of God. You can't do any better in life than to please Him. So you want to make it your goal in life to be well-pleasing to Him. I hope that as a result of our study together with the encouragement of your parents, that it, each one of you, parents and children alike, that years from now someone comes and asks you, what's your goal in life? That you will say, I seek to please God. Make that your goal in life. If you would turn to Proverbs chapter 1. Lee, I'm glad you turned back to Proverbs. We're going to be looking at a number of verses in this wonderful book. In Proverbs chapter 1, and he read one of them in chapter 3, but it's real interesting to note in Proverbs, beginning with chapter 1, how many times the exhortation is given to listen, I'm going to say to parents. He specifically says, listen to your father. Look in chapter 1 and verse 8. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. He says, listen. He says that a number of times in this context. Again, in verse 10, he says, my son, to listen. In verse chapter 2 and verse 1, my son, if you receive my words. In fact, let's just notice something very quickly in Proverbs chapter 2. It combines attitude of heart with what can happen and will happen when you have the right kind of attitude. In chapter 2 and verse 1, my son, if you receive my words. Now notice this word if. If then, he's going to say. If these conditions are met, then here's what will happen. If you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. Yes, if, we've got a long list of ifs here. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then, if you have these qualities about you, if you have a desire for truth, if you seek for truth and wisdom as for silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. That tells us that I've got to have the right kind of attitude before I can ever come to a knowledge of truth. Again, that comes back to make it your goal to be well-pleasing to God. Seek out His will. Desire to want the truth. And when you have that desire for wisdom and truth, then He says you can come to know that and to understand that. Chapter 3 and verse 1 that Lee read for us. My son, do not forget my law. Just on your own, I hope you will soon read through the first 9 chapters of Proverbs. And notice how frequently it says, my son, listen. My son, pay attention. My son, listen carefully to what I've got to tell you. When you're a parent and you read these verses, you can almost hear the longing in the heart. You know what it's like to desire for your children the best. You want your children to do well. You want your children to, when they grow, have a happy family. You want the best for your children. You want them to go to heaven. You know how much your heart yearns for that. You just want that. You want them to choose the right kind of mate. You want them to be good parents. There's just this longing within the heart. And whenever I read these passages, I can just feel that. My son, please listen to me. We recently talked with one of our sons, our youngest one. He was having some difficulties, and we read these verses together. And I could read them with the emotions that would be there. Please listen to your dad. I know what I'm talking about. And here the writer of Proverbs says to young people, listen. Now, notice up here on the screen, we say, yes, sons, daughters, you need to listen. But there's something implied in that, isn't there? That the parents teach you. Stop and think, if we say, yes, I want my children to listen, well, what are they hearing? When you say you need to listen, well, listen to what? He says, listen to my instruction. Now, he's talking from God's Word here. And so if we understand that the child needs to be listening, parents, are you teaching? Are you equipping them so that when they go out in life, they can be able to handle the trials and temptations that they are going to face? Again, back in chapter 3, Proverbs 3, do you memorize verses? Here's some verses good to memorize. Let these sink deep into your heart. Let these verses form your ideas about life. He says in verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Now, so then we're not talking about just memorizing a string of words in the right order. We're talking about taking these thoughts into the heart. Let these form the heart. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. In other words, you give glory and credit to God. Be aware that He's there. He knows. He can help. He shall direct your paths. He does that, obviously, through His Word. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. How about that? Don't be wise in your own eyes. You know that when you become a teenager, you know everything. Right? I see, Heather, you're 16. There's somebody here that's just turned teenager, 13. Who was that? I thought somebody just turned 13 recently. Okay, well, 14 or 15. When our firstborn son became a teenager, he got a sign to hang in his room that says, hire a teenager while he knows everything. What is there about that age that you get to that you say, I know everything, that your parents can't tell you anything? You already know it. And your parents can really be dumb. And then as you get older, your parents get smarter. That's strange how that happens. It's like we learn some things in life. I hope that you understand that's not the way it is. Let's just be real kind, but real blunt. You don't know everything. You just don't. Yeah, you've learned a lot of things in life, but you don't know everything. And this verse is just very plainly, God says, do not be wise in your own eyes. Don't think that you've reached an age where you've got all the answers. I'm a little bit older than teenage years, and I can honestly say I don't have all the answers. Now, I know where the answers are. I know where to go to find the answers. But there are still a lot of things I'm learning. I don't know everything yet. And the earlier we learn that lesson that we don't know everything and listen to somebody else and go get some advice from people, God says that's the wise thing to do. And, of course, that's what He's going to be saying here. Don't be wise in your own eyes, but listen to wise counsel. Now, I find it interesting that when you get older, as you're younger and growing older, there are things that you look forward to. It'd be like if you're 12, you're looking forward to being a teenager. If you're in your teen years, you'd like to be a little bit older. Have you ever noticed that young people, when you say, well, how old are you? They might say, well, I'm 12 and a half. I don't say I'm 63 and a half. Why is that? I really don't want to get older, but that's better than the alternative. But when you're younger, you always want to try to be older, so you're always the 12 and a half. You're always working up towards that next level. Then you want to get older and drive and things. We had recently some leadership classes where the elders of the church there in Greencastle made the decision that we wanted the young men, and we're talking about some of the younger boys and all, to come to a class because leadership in the church is important, being elders and deacons, but leadership in the home is also important, being good fathers, being good husbands. We tried to cover a lot of different aspects of that. But one of the young boys, and he's six, I think, at 6 years old, they encouraged him to come to the class. And the mother said to him, it had to do with becoming a man. And he said, so are we going to learn how to drive a car and shoot a gun? That was his concept of being a man. Now, do you think he's got some things to learn? Of course he does. Don't be wise in your own eyes. You do not know everything. Turn with me back to chapter 1. As a child, a young person, you like to have friends. you like to be popular. And you seek that out. God has some very sound advice for us about the friends that we keep. In chapter 1 and verse 10, he says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." There are going to be people in the world, even people your age, that you might enjoy their friendship, but they are sinners. They are set to do evil. They will try to encourage you to do what's wrong. God says, do not listen, do not consent. If they say, "Come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood, let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause, let us swallow them alive like Sheol or the grave, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse." In other words, they're inviting you to come. Boy, we're going to get a lot out of this. We're going to gain something. But come with us. They're going to do evil in the process of gaining something. And he says, "My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. For their feet run to evil. They make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owner." When someone encourages you, invites you, entices you to do something that's wrong, don't do it. God says, don't listen to them. Don't go down that path. I trust we understand that if you're going to have a true friend will encourage you to do what's right. Those are the kind of friends that you want. You want to have a friend who will, if you do something wrong, they'll point that out so that you don't do it. That you have a friend that if there's the temptation to do something wrong, they've got the strength to say, "I'm not going to do that." And they won't encourage you in what's wrong. Someone who encourages you to do what's wrong, that's not your friend. So strong can friendships be to influence us that Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15, "Be not deceived." In other words, don't fool yourself. Evil companionship corrupts good morals. You know what the context is for that passage? That is so interesting where that verse occurs. You know, you should always take context into consideration. What's the context? 1 Corinthians 15. "Be not deceived. Evil companionship corrupts good morals." Is that a discussion of the resurrection? And Paul is addressing a real problem that there were some who were denying a resurrection. And Paul reasons with them, well, if there's no resurrection, then Christ hasn't been raised from the dead. And if Christ hasn't been raised from the dead, then we are all without hope. And it's a miserable life. In the context of dealing with the crucifixion and then the ultimate resurrection of Jesus Christ, and some denying a resurrection, he says, watch out, that can influence you. When you stop and realize that the resurrection is the very foundation of following Jesus Christ, that's what gives us hope. That's what proclaims him to be the Christ, the Son of God. To deny the resurrection of Jesus, that's just terrible. That's the very foundation. And you mean to tell me that a person who's a Christian could be ultimately convinced to deny the resurrection? That's what Paul's dealing with. Watch out for those who deny a resurrection. It will influence you. That tells us something about how powerful the influence can be of someone who's not a Christian. They can influence you for evil. And so he says, don't fool yourself. Don't be deceived. It can happen. But again, I can't emphasize this enough. You can have friends, but when those friends encourage you to do what's wrong, that's not a friend. Friends will help you do what's right. Choose as friends those people who will do that. In Proverbs chapter 2, in verse 16, he makes reference to an immoral, ungodly woman. And I know there's some views that this is a personification of wisdom and that which is contrary to wisdom, the immoral woman. And that may be the case, but he uses immoral women as an illustration. So I know this is true in life. I personally believe that's what he's talking about, literally these immoral women. He says in verse 16, to deliver you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. In other words, she's married, but she's not honoring that marriage. Her house leads down to death, her paths to the dead. None who go to her return, nor do they regain the paths of life. He's warning here about this immoral woman. The same thing is true in chapter 5. He mentions this a number of times in these passages. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion and your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. Again, warning of the immoral woman. I'll tell you in a moment why I'm reading these. And then chapter 7. Let me just read this whole chapter. It's good. I want you to be impressed with this. Now, here's why I'm going over this. These are for, like, preteen, teens, young men, young women. In our society today, we've got a real problem with pornography. It used to be when I was growing up, if you're going to look at pornography, you had to go down to the seedy section of town and get the magazines down there. Well, you wouldn't be seen down there, but if you wanted pornography, that's where you would go. I remember the place in Louisville where that was. As time has passed, it's crept a little bit closer, hasn't it? Now you can bring filthy movies into your house, and on the internet, you have access to all kinds of filth. Things that are so bad I wouldn't want to describe from here. But the things that can be accessed on the internet deal with the immoral woman. The one who tries to seduce. The one who tempts you. The one who gives you assurances that this is okay. And in the privacy of your own home, you can gain access to as much filth as is out there. It's terrible. Now, we need to equip ourselves. Now, obviously, this isn't just for the younger people. This is for older people also. Of how readily available this illicit sex is. Whether it's actually engaging in it or watching the depiction of it. When you participate in that, whether you are there physically with someone or whether you're there in the mind, remember that Jesus said, whoever looks at a woman and lusts after her, he has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And Paul says, if you're guilty of adultery, you cannot go to heaven. You lose your soul. So we need to be reminded of these truths, and this passage, or these passages here in Proverbs, help a whole lot. In Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 1, my son, there it is again. Keep my words and treasure my commands within you. Keep my commands and live, and my law is the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. In other words, keep that close to you. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your nearest kin. In other words, there's a truth, and it's pure, and it's holy. And he says, you keep that close to you. Why? That they may keep you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. There is temptation all around. There's got to be some protection against that. There is. You keep God's word close to your heart. You let that protect you. You call to mind, what does God want me to do? Again, if you're tempted to look at something like that, remember, I'm going to make it my goal to be pleasing to God. And when you call that to mind, you say, this is not pleasing. I need to look away. Let's keep reading. For at the window of my house, I looked through my lattice and saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a young man devoid of understanding. By the way, a few moments ago when I said we like to be older, we like to do things that make us more mature, we like to, you know, move up to those things where I'm older. God portrays the older person as being wise and mature, and he encourages the young person to be wise. And that's in opposition to the fool. So if you want to set a goal for yourself and say, I'm going to be older, I'm going to be more mature, God says, seek out wisdom. The young person who seeks out what's right, the young person who seeks the wisdom of God, God characterizes that as a truly mature, well-grounded person. That's what you want, as opposed, as I said, to being the fool. All right, so he describes this young man here who's devoid of understanding. Here's the one who doesn't reason like he ought to. Here's the one that doesn't put all the truth together and come up with the right answer. He sees this young man passing, verse 8, passing along the street near her corner. Here's the seducing woman. He took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have my peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you, diligently to seek your face. And I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He's gone on a long journey. He's taken a bag of money with him, and he will come home on the appointed day. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. In this story, we read of a woman who's seducing this young man. Does she give him assurances that this will be wonderful? This will be okay? There's no problems. You can get away with this. My husband's gone. He's going to be away. There's no danger here. Come, let's take our fill of love. My, what assurances he gives. And you can almost imagine as he is tempted by this woman and with these pleasurable words that she speaks to him, and she grabs him and she kisses him and gives him all these assurances, that he's thinking, ah, this is going to be wonderful. And such are the ways of temptations when you're talking about sexual desires. God has made the fulfilling of sexual desires a really wonderful thing. And so that's what he's thinking. This is going to be great. Let's look at the next verse. What he perceives is not the truth. Here's what is in fact happening. Immediately, verse 22, he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter. Do you think there's a difference in how he viewed himself and what he's going to enjoy and what is in fact happening? We would be wise to realize that what I'm being tempted with and what I'm being offered and what is being told to me, this is okay and you can get away with this, nobody's going to know and this is going to be enjoyable, that all may be true, and you think this is going to be a good time, and for a moment there's pleasure, but God says, you look like an ox going to the slaughter. Anybody here want to look like an ox going to slaughter? I don't. And God says, that's what you're doing. He goes on to say, till an arrow struck his liver. Oh, I'm sorry. Rest of verse 22. Or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. Till an arrow struck his liver. As a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would cost his life. Can you see that bird just going along as it would and think it's going to just eat the food here and everything's okay and get caught in a snare? Can you see that bird flopping around trying to get away? It's caught. Too late. It's gone. Now, therefore, listen to me, my children. Again, can you sense that tenderness, that desire? Please, please listen. There's real danger out there. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray down into her paths. For she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to Sheol, or hell, descending to the chambers of death. Here were men they thought were strong men. We can handle this. No. you're doomed for destruction. Young people, listen carefully. There are many dangers out there. A lot of them have to do with sexual temptation. And you will hear all kinds of assurances that everything will be okay. You give in to that, and you will be like the ox going to the slaughter. That's not a pretty picture, is it? Her ways are the ways of death, he says. God warns us about going down that path. Parents, you need to be aware of those dangers, especially on the internet, TV. If you've got computers, be careful if it's in the bedroom and you can't control what's coming across the internet. You need to be mindful of that. You need to take whatever precautions are to guard against that. It is intrusive. It's evasive. It's like a monster that comes into the home. And I have dealt with people, older people, who have become addicted to this. They just keep practicing it out of habit. They keep turning to the pornography, and it gets worse and worse. You're the ox going to slaughter. God says, watch out, young people. Be careful about that. Do not give in to the lust of the flesh. Fulfilling sexual desires is to take place only between the husband and his wife. That's it. Not to be repetitious, but let's just hit that one more time. Fulfilling of sexual desires, according to the will of God, is to take place only between the husband and his wife. That's it. Anything else is a sin. And it will cause you to lose your soul. And I will guarantee this, that whatever pleasure you think you get from an illicit sexual relationship, it will not be worth eternity in hell. If on the day of judgment you become separated from God for eternity, and you're there in hell, you will not be saying, I sure am glad I committed those sins. You will not say, boy, that momentary pleasure was worth it. You won't say that. It will be terrible. You would give anything in the world to go back in time and not do that and do what's right before God. But it will be too late then. So those temptations are out there. You've got to equip yourself to realize it is a temptation. I need to run away from it. We'll say more about that in just a few moments. No, I'll say it right now. Be a Joseph, Genesis 39 and verse 9. Remember when Joseph was tempted by Potiphar's wife? I always thought that story is so interesting. We learned just a whole lot from it. Some have said, in regard to the Potiphar, that he was the chief executioner. Many scholars say that. Isn't that interesting that here you have a young man like Joseph who finds himself head of Potiphar's household? Potiphar, if he was indeed the chief executioner, if there's somebody that you would not want to have any problems with his wife, it would be that fellow, the chief executioner in all of Egypt. And here he was in the house with this woman, and because Joseph was good looking, and she tried to tempt him on a daily basis. In fact, she was doing like the woman we read in Proverbs chapter 7. Joseph refused, we're told in verse 8, after she says, lie with me. He refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? What's he doing there? Calling to mind God's will. A life that he wants to please God. How can I do this great wickedness? He identifies it for what it is. It's wicked. How can I commit this sin against God? And then what does he do when she still tries to persist? He runs away. Sometimes you may have to literally do that. run away. Physically remove yourself from the temptation at hand. So be a Joseph. There are other examples in the Bible. We'll let that one suffice. Obviously, when you talk to children and their responsibilities, we have to call to mind what God told the people through Paul in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Remember, in our previous lessons, we said that these conclusions that Paul draws for the husband, for the wife, for the parent, for the child, all that's based upon what God has done through Jesus Christ. What a marvelous thing He has done. And that's to be brought down into the reality of what goes on in the home between the husband and wife, the parents and the children, and then for the children to understand, here's what God expects of me. He's done wondrous things. And here's the way I'm supposed to act in view of that. Obey your parents. Good verse to memorize. That's easy to remember, isn't it? Children, obey your parents. So remember that and do that. That's real simple. Then we find in chapter 6 and verse 2 something else. He says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. When God gave the Ten Commandments to the people of Israel, kind of a summary of all that the law had, that was a part of it. That was one of the commandments. And here that's repeated for people under the New Testament age. We're not under the Old Testament law. But here's something that He says, you do this, you honor your parents. And this is something that goes beyond just the children in the home. This is a respect, and again, it's something from the heart. It's not just going through the motions. It's from the heart that you have a respect for your parents. My parents, I'm thankful, are still alive. Even though I started my own family, I still honor them. And I still respect them. That was hard. A few years ago, I was going to take down a barn. And I called Dad for advice. I was like 50-something years old. I knew what I was doing. And I told them my plan. I'm going to take down a barn. My mom and dad both said, now Skip, don't you do that. It was like I'd turned to be 13 again. That hurt me. I felt myself becoming angry. I thought, well, who are they to tell me if I want to take down a barn, I can take it down. But then I got control of myself and realized they love me. Dad's an expert in working with wood and all. And they had done something like that before I hadn't. And they gave me all the reasons why I ought not to do that. I decided, you know what? I ought not to do that. Not because I'm subject to my parents, but I respect them. I respect what they had to say. I respected their knowledge. Even though, 50 years, something years old, and I'm still listening to my parents? Yeah, because I respect them. Honor your parents so that even after you leave home and you start your own family and you still have that love and respect for them, there's going to come a time that they're going to need you as they get older and all the health issues that an older person faces. God gives the responsibility of the care for that parent to you, the child. They spent years raising you. Now, in their old age, you are to respect and honor them. And that's included in this, children, honor your parents. To have the kind of attitude that, again, comes from the heart, that you're going to love them, you're going to care for them, do as much as you can for them as they are in their as they call the golden years. But to have that respect for them. Well, we need to stop at this point. Again, I hope these thoughts have helped. We've got one more lesson to do, and that's this afternoon at 2:30. Is that right? That's the right time? And that time we're going to study how to communicate, how to talk with one another to actually solve problems instead of creating more problems. And it's a fitting lesson to have at the end of what does God want me to be, to do and to be as a husband, wife, a parent, as a child. And communicating with one another is extremely important. Does God tell us how to do that? Of course He does. He tells us to do it, and he tells us how to do it so that we can solve problems. So that's the lesson for this afternoon. If you'd like to go ahead and get your psalm books open to, what's the number? 40?
92.
92? Number 92. We'd like to extend at this time, at the close of this lesson, an opportunity for you to respond to God's wonderful grace, His love. If in the course of our study together just these past few days, if you've been convicted of something, let's say that you realize, you know, my life's not going the right direction. I do need to take charge in my life and conform my life to the will of God. Haven't done that yet, but I need to start. This is a good time to start. Just make whatever changes you need to make. Let's do that today. If you're not yet a Christian, then you would come believing in Jesus as the Son of God, repenting of your sins, confessing Christ before men, and with that desire to die with Jesus, to be buried with Him in baptism, to be raised to walk in newness of life. You could leave this morning a child of God. Wouldn't it be wonderful? All your sins forgiven. Maybe you've done that, but you've not been faithful as a Christian, maybe failing as a parent, failing as a child. Sin has come into your life. The sin may be of a nature that you can just go to the people that you've sinned against and deal with that. Maybe it's more public in nature. Maybe you desire the prayers of the saints here that you need help getting things turned around in your life. If you need to respond this morning, be mindful of the fact you're in the midst of friends, you're in the midst of people that love you. It's a good time to turn your life around. If you need to do that and to respond, please do so now by coming forward. Let's stand and sing.